Window World is proud to present Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. Simply the best for less at WindowsKansasCity.com.
When was the last time you stood up and cheered something that wasn't a sporting event? Well, for me, it was Thursday. Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio just unloaded with his questioning of Dr. Tony Fauci about when we will get our freedoms and liberties back. Fauci's response? This isn't about liberty. It's about a virus. Jordan then just took it up another notch. I'll play you an awesome clip and give you my thoughts about giving us our liberty or giving us death. When was the first time you heard the term Asian hate? This is a new thing the liberal media are spewing all over the place, trying to make it look like the majority, implying white people in America, are racist, even against Asian Americans. It's just awful they're peddling this stuff as a thing. But the actual incidents of crime against Asians or Asian Americans tell a completely different story about Asian hate. Shocker. The Royals are 7-4 on the young season. Who could possibly complain about that? Well, you may think I am, but I'm not. I just see some flaws that have got to get shored up, including defining real roles in the bullpen, which was a problem in their latest win. This is a great start, but the Royals have got to get better to make a serious run at the playoffs. Man, this is exciting to see at 7-4. 1,375 college basketball players transferred in the last month through the NCAA transfer portal. That's right, 1,375. KU coach Bill Self has some scathing comments about it, and he's right. We'll break it down. Also, a local race car driver gets her chance of a lifetime to compete in a Cup Series race at Talladega April 25th. This is so awesome, and I'm really happy for her. It's brought to you by Elite Automation, designing and installing intelligent building systems that can save you thousands off your utilities. Schools, churches, office buildings, you name it. You can save money with Elite Automation. They're online at EliteAutomate.com. They also provide a free consulting service. You don't have to buy anything or install anything. They'll come look at your workplace and say, listen, you're losing money here, you're losing money here, you're losing money here. Let's save that money. And when you save that money, Elite Automation gets a piece of it. That's all. Everybody wins. What's it hurt to make this call? Like Trump used to say, what the hell you have to lose? Give Elite Automation a call and see if they can save your company money right now. 913-766-2188. That's 766-2188. Online at EliteAutomate.com. Make your building great again. Roberts Robinson, Chevrolet Buick GMC in Excelsior Springs. Roberts Robinson, we just make it easy. That's what the customers say. I got an unbelievable nice text from Mike yesterday at Roberts Robinson. He's such a nice man and really enjoys the podcast, and he's heard from many of you. He had a couple people come in a couple of weeks ago and buy cars and mention that they heard about it on the podcast. It's so unbelievable of you. You can get your car serviced there too, and they got a great inventory of pre-owned cars right now. They'll also buy your car, all right? As some of these factories have shut down with the computer chip shortage, the supplies of newer cars is dwindling a little bit, but man, you can get a great deal right now by selling your car to Roberts Robinson. Trade-in values are way up. They'd love to buy your car or sell you a pre-owned vehicle. They've got all makes and models right there at Roberts Robinson. They're online as well at robertsrobinson.com. He's just a good dude that does things the right way. And if you're ever in the market for a Chevy, a Buick, or a GMC, you don't have to live near Excelsior. You don't. You can do this with somebody that you can trust, that you know, that you are 1,000% not going to be under. Nobody's going to undersell them, okay? Get it there. They'll drive it right to your house no matter where you live. They'll deliver it to you. At Roberts Robinson, they really will make it easy. They just completely change the car buying experience. Give them a chance. At Roberts Robinson, Chevrolet Buick GMC, in Excelsior Springs, or online at robertsrobinson.com. And TJ Vilkanskis and the good folks at back9development.com. TJ is a custom builder and general contractor. They do commercial work. They build houses. They'll do room additions. He's building a condo community at Colbert Hills Golf Course in Manhattan called the Solheim at Grand Mere. Great for second homes, college kids, investment properties. They begin at $249, one and two bedroom upscale condominiums with a resort pool, a fitness facility, a clubhouse, elevators, covered parking, and views of the Colbert Hills Golf Course, sunsets, and the gorgeous Flint Hills. If you haven't been to these properties, go check it out. TJ would personally tour this for you. If you'd like to tour it and see, could take a look at the different units right now and where they'll be and get an idea of what your view is, give him a call. Just call TJ personally. He owns the company and he'll personally give you a tour. 785-236-0161. That's 785 936-0161. Online at Back9, it's the numeral 9, back9development.com. Jim Jordan made me stand up and cheer on the Capitol yesterday when questioning Tony Fauci. That is up right now on KKHI. Hit it!
Sports, politics, life. Buck Roofing presents Kevin Keatsman Has Issues.
Hey, you know that feeling you get when you're watching one of your favorite sporting events and you kind of jump out of your chair and you pound your fist and you high-five somebody in the room or at the game or you bump chests or whatever you do and you get really, really excited over a play, a moment in a game that you've just been waiting for, especially when it's late in the game and maybe your team has been struggling. You know, the Chiefs have been in some sort of a pillow fight or something and it's lower scoring and it's 20-20 and you're wondering why. You know, they're playing Jacksonville and the game is close or something like that. And then the big play happens and you're so excited. And you're like, yes, yes, that's what I've been waiting for. I got that moment. I got that feeling yesterday for one of the first times ever because it was instantaneous the second I saw it. It wasn't like, you know, when Trump won the election, that was election night. It built up over about a 45-minute period. You could just see it rolling and rolling and rolling. And you're like, oh, and it took time. But there was just this moment yesterday when I watched the video of Jim Jordan and the hearing that they had at the Capitol with Dr. Tony Fauci, and somebody finally, because the media haven't, it's the proper way to say that, the media haven't done this. It was finally the moment where somebody confronted Dr. Fauci about everything that's going on with the continual lockdowns. I've got some amazing numbers for you here coming up in a moment of some things that are going on, but if you missed this, I've got a cut right here that I want to play for you. Jim Jordan on Capitol Hill, Tony Fauci is in the chair and he's got a mask on with, it was funny. It was a funny looking mask. It was test tubes and medical supplies. And it was very strange. It was very thick. At times you couldn't hear what he was saying. He was too far away from the microphone. Most of the committee obviously was Democrats in there just lobbing softballs at him, telling him how great he was. And then Jim Jordan from Ohio, the representative, took over, and it got wild.
When is the time? Well, in your written statement, you say, now is not the time to pull back on masking, physical distancing, and avoiding congregate settings. When is the time? When do Americans get their freedom back? Can you put your microphone on, please?
Right. When we get the level of infection in this country low enough that it is not a really high threat.
What is low enough? Give me a number. What I mean, we had 15 days to slow the spread, turned into 1 year of lost liberty. What metrics, what measures, what has to happen before Americans get their freedoms back?
My message, Congressman Jordan, is to get as many people vaccinated as quickly as we possibly can to get the level of infection in this country low that it is no longer a threat. That is when. And I believe when that happens, you will see.
What determines when?
I'm sorry.
What? What measure? What, I mean, are we just going to continue this forever? Or when do we get to the point? What measure, what standard, what objective outcome do we have to reach before Americans get their liberty and freedoms back?
You know, you're indicating liberty and freedom. I look at it as a public health measure to prevent people from dying and going to the hospital.
You don't think Americans' liberties have been threatened the last year, Dr. Fauci? They've been assaulted. Their liberties have.
I don't look at this as a liberty thing, Congressman Jordan.
Well, that's obvious.
As a public health thing.
But I
disagree with you on that.
You think the Constitution is suspended during a virus, during a pandemic? It's certainly not.
This will end for sure when we get the level of infection very low. It is now at such a high level, there's a threat again of major surge.
Dr. Fauci, over the last year, Americans' First Amendment rights have been completely attacked. Give us your best guess then.
I just did.
No, you didn't. You didn't give us a time. When do you think this is going to, are we going to be here 2 years from now wearing masks?
Jim Jordan asked Dr. Fauci
the same question?
Well, let me end your ranting again.
I'm not ranting.
Yes, you are.
No, I here's how it works, Dr. Fauci.
Right.
I get to ask you the question. You're the highest paid official in the United States government. You've given us your advice on baseball, on dating apps, on cruise ships. You told us zero mask, one mask, two masks, now back to one mask. I'm just asking you, when is it going to end? You can say I'm ranting. I'm actually asking the question that the citizens I get the privilege of representing, and my name actually goes on a ballot. I don't think your name's ever been on a ballot. My name goes on a ballot. The citizens I represent want to know the answer to when they can get their liberties back. You know, you can call that ranting. I actually call it standing up for the Constitution, which I take an oath to uphold, Dr. Fauci, every year, every term that I serve in this Congress representing the folks in the 4th District of Ohio. So it is not ranting. It is defending the First Amendment.
Bye, Jerry.
And we'd like an answer, or your best guess, since you got an answer for everything else.
Okay, there's Sir Jim Jordan right there with Dr. Tony Fauci, basically saying and asking the things that we want to know. When does it end? What is the benchmark? What is it? And you could tell Fauci was never going to answer the question. He does not want to be on record as saying, this is when we can go back to normal. He doesn't want to do that. Jordan pointing out, you'll give us an opinion on all these other things. You know, baseball and dating and, you know, how many masks to wear. You tell us all that stuff and we follow it. But you won't tell us what the benchmark is for cases or anything like that for when we can go back to normal or how many people have to be vaccinated or where we are. Jordan rightfully pointing out that the Constitution, you know, supersedes all of this. And Fauci, clearly a liberal, does not care about the Constitution, and maybe he shouldn't. His job, obviously, is to infectious disease and to advise government officials to make decisions. But we've just gone with everything he says. Like, this is where I have a problem, because I've seen people in sports that are just idolized, that we just think they're smarter and better than everyone else. And while they may be successful, some of them are really smart and aren't. I'm always reminded that Bob Boone, the former manager years ago of the Royals, was a very smart guy, but he was a terrible manager. He may have been the smartest guy in the room, but he didn't know what he was doing. And so that happens. And Fauci may be the smartest guy in the room, but he doesn't know what he's doing. And to just blindly say, we're going to listen to this guy, there's too much anecdotal evidence, there's too much perception and human instinct that we have here, that we're going about this the wrong way, that it is too much at this point. We have complete knowledge of who this most affects. We have a vaccine that is available to everyone. We have millions of people that have had COVID-19. What on earth are we doing continuing this? I don't understand. If you've taken the vaccine, why are you still locked down? If you've taken the vaccine, why do you have to wear a mask? I don't get any of it. If you've taken the vaccine, can you give it to someone? Can you get it? Is this all a lie? Does it not work? I don't know. I saw a story this morning. When I turned the television on, it was on ABC for whatever reason. That was, I guess, what was on last night. And I've just stayed away from Good Morning America as best I can. I used to watch it a lot, and I stopped watching it during the Obama years because it was just, it's too much. It was all race, 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 race. That's all it is. Well, then it was anti-Trump, anti-Trump. I'm gone. I'm out. But it comes on today. I seriously haven't seen it in 6 months. And it comes on today, and they're talking about how, you know, only 6,000 people that have taken the vaccine have gotten COVID, that this is a really low number. Well, I didn't know 6,000 people that have taken the vaccine have gotten COVID. And that may be a low number. Out of the millions that have taken it, that may be a low number. It's certainly an acceptable number to me. I'm not complaining about that. But they're bragging about it. And I was like, I didn't know people that get in the shot were still getting COVID. It was news to me. And they were just spinning all this that it was so great. And then they showed a clip of Fauci at the thing that Jim Jordan, who is often cantankerous and misleading in his questions, tried to grill Fauci. And then they selectively cut something where Jordan kind of stumbled with his question. And then they show Fauci saying, well, and he sort of sounds good. And they're like, oh, Fauci's great. Then they finish this story that everything's going well and the vaccine works and everything is great. And then they come out to another story. We got record Wall Street highs. This economy's never been this good. I'm like, wow, wow. Where was the live shot at Wall Street the 13 times Donald Trump had, you know, record? Well, that's more than that. I'm talking about every time it went 1,000 higher. Every time it went 1,000 higher and closed during Trump's presidency, where were those live shots those 13 times? They didn't exist. I can't believe what's happening out there with the media. It is really, really remarkable. And I see these numbers, and I thought to myself, no, Jim Jordan's instincts are right. My instincts are right. This is over. You have access to the vaccine. The government's paying for it. Okay? You may have had COVID, and you certainly know if you're at risk or not. whether you have an underlying health issue or your age or whatever it may be. We all know who's in more danger than other. Now we have numbers from 13 months about what's transpired. We have 600,000 more deaths in the United States over 13 months. That means we had a total death toll. These don't add up, folks. These numbers don't add up. They're saying 600,000 more deaths over 13 months. But our death total for 2020 was 3.1 million. That's up from 2.7 million. That's 400,000 more deaths in 2020. Okay? But they're saying 600,000 more deaths, the CDC is, attributed to everything. All right? COVID-related, right? 75% of those 600,000, according to the CDC. And again, their numbers don't add up here. 75% of those, that's 450,000, are attributed to COVID. So when Fauci is sitting there saying, you know, 600 and some thousand have died of COVID, that's not right. That's inaccurate. That's misleading, and he's doing his thing. 75% of the 600,000, I'll dispute, I don't know whether it's 600,000 or 400,000. We typically have 2.7 million people die every year in the United States, and in 2020 it was 3.1. To me, that's 400,000 more deaths than a normal year. That's on record. That's fact. But the CDC also says there were 600,000 more deaths. Now, they may be using a 13-month slice here and adding January because it's selective, as is everything the CDC does. So they don't want you to know that the death toll only went up in 2020 by 400,000. They don't want you to know that. So they selectively peel off a 13-month period, which probably started last February and runs through March of this year. Or March through March would be 13 months. That's probably what they're peeling off here because that's all COVID, and we may be up 600,000 through that. See, it's a bait and switch. This is what they do. I know this. In the year of COVID, 2020, American deaths went up 400,000. The CDC says 75% of those deaths are COVID. That means we had 300,000. The other 100,000 were an increase in drug overdoses, homicide, and suicide. Lockdown deaths. So if we just take 2020 and we say there were 400,000 more deaths, we had 300,000 for COVID, we created 100,000 with the way we treated COVID. This is really important. So that is a net gain of 200,000 deaths, which is bad in 2020. That's terrible. We don't want 200,000 people more to die in a year. But the CDC itself says, and again, I don't believe these numbers. I don't believe that only 25% of the new deaths were from things other than COVID. I don't believe that. I've seen the homicide rates go up. 87,000. So here's the numbers. If 400,000 more deaths occurred in 2020, how are there 87,000 more drug overdoses? 87,000 more people died of a drug overdose, according to the CDC. You're telling me only 13,000 more people died of homicide or suicide or some other thing related to COVID that wasn't COVID? I don't believe that for a second. Stress, heart attack, any type of thing that completely, you know, when you freak out and you're losing your mind and all this stress builds up, high blood pressure, strokes, you name it, you're telling me those didn't go up during this lockdown? I mean, this evidence, this is not, these are stats. This is not anecdotal, but this is something that we knew. People that have instinct, gut instinct, human instinct, not Dr. Fauci. Okay. And we need this at the highest level of government. This is what we miss out on. When you hear the Democrats say, follow the science. Well, they don't really follow the science. They don't really care about that. They're trying to convince you that no other opinion matters. That what Jim Jordan thinks and the Constitution doesn't matter. The science is the only thing that matters. Liberalism is rooted in this. They believe that they have the market on science. Science is evolving. It's ever-changing. It isn't correct. It's not 100%. It is not pure. The vaccines will change. The vaccines that we have now will not be the same vaccine that we have a year from now. They will change. Science evolves. It is not an exact science. That is the most misleading term in the world, exact science. No, a lot of science is based on percentages. And we get into the 90th percentile and we go, that's science. We like that. That vaccine over there is 90-some percent effective. That's science. Well, that's not 100%. That's not a fact. A fact is 100%. Most of science is not a fact. Most of science is really high percentages. We like the really high percentages over here. But who among us in this audience right here didn't know that when we shut the country down and did to ourselves what we did, and everyone around the world freaked out and did what they did, that when we did this, who among us didn't know that we were doing damage to people who were never going to die of COVID? I mean, you can call it common sense, you can call it conservatism, you can call it whatever you want, but anybody that didn't know that the second we shut things down isn't really being truthful or really doesn't understand the human condition and society and living together and with one another. It's a total disregard for the way we live, for what the Constitution is all about. You've heard the term, give me liberty or give me death. That's basically what Jim Jordan was saying. Give us back our liberties, and if we die of COVID, we die of COVID. He's trying to tell Dr. Fauci, which Dr. Fauci simply doesn't understand, that there are 80 million Americans out there that voted for one candidate that like their liberty a lot more than they're afraid of dying of COVID. I know that sounds a little complicated, but these are the really important things in these issues. Again, at least 80 million Americans. It's got to be more than that because a lot of people didn't vote. You know how many millions and millions and millions of Americans prefer their freedom and their liberty and people leaving them alone and not telling them what to do versus the possibility of dying of COVID? I'm in that category. I think you're probably in that category. Something's going to kill me someday. I'm not ready to die. I feel like I'm still a young man. I'm not ready for it. I never was afraid of COVID. I could have been wrong. I've said it many times in this podcast. I could have been foolish and selfish and wrong. But I'm healthy. I'm a smart guy, smart enough, not as smart as Dr. Fauci, but I'll tell you what, I got a lot more common sense and instinct than he does. A lot more. To bumble around and say, no mask, then one mask, then two masks. I think at some point somebody said three masks. You'd never catch me saying that and advising people that. Never. I mean, this is somebody, a lot of times, I've met a lot of people in my life that are really smart at school. They passed every test. They got an amazing degree. And you're like, wow, that person's really smart. And when you're around them, you're like, that person is dumb as a stump. Just can't get out of their own way. And I just think this is really important. I think we need a lot of common sense people at the highest levels of government that say, wait a second, it isn't just a formula on a piece of paper. There are other things here. And again, these are staggering numbers. All right, if we had 400,000 more deaths in 2020, 300,000 of those are from COVID, but we created and basically killed 100,000 more people that were not going to die of COVID. Now, where is that story? By our actions, it's the theme of this podcast, for every action, there's a reaction. All right, we had an action to lock everything down and keep the COVID deaths down. So we killed 100,000 innocent people in some fashion, whatever it may have been. A lot of these are homicide. People went crazy. Homicide rates are up everywhere. They're locked down. Of course you're going to have more homicides. Yes, you're going to have more suicides. Yes, more people are going to take drugs and die. It's all going to happen. When you ruin people's lives, when you alter society in such a dramatic fashion as we did, there's going to be a ripple effect. For every action, there's a reaction. And so here it was with COVID. So we lost 300,000 to COVID. We added 100,000 because of the way we handled it. So in 2020, our net gain from all of this was 200,000 deaths. And I feel terrible about that. Nobody wants 200,000 more deaths a year. 360 million people, 200,000 more deaths, and 360 million, all 360 million people had their lives changed. Every one of us. So all 360 million people in some way had their life turned upside down and changed. And again, a lot of people profited off COVID, made money, some businesses thrived. I'm not saying everybody was hurting, okay? But everybody's life was altered in a dramatic way during COVID. And this was over, what, a net death toll of 200,000 people? I'm sorry. I think Jim Jordan was spot on with Dr. Fauci. I think Fauci at least got to hear and feel what tens of millions, maybe hundreds of millions of Americans are thinking and feeling right now that him living in his bubble in Washington, D.C. all these years never hears. He runs around in circles with liberals. They're in a bubble. This country is very diverse. You know, the liberals like to run around and say, we have strength in our diversity. Well, okay, we have our diversity here in the Midwest too. It has nothing to do with skin color. Our diversity here is the way we choose to live. We like open spaces. We don't like our life changed. We like the government leaving us alone. We like to make our own decisions. We, for the most part, don't like traffic, pollution, noise, tight spaces. We don't like those things as a rule. That's why, you know, people complain about the expansion of a place like Kansas City or all the cities that just keep growing out and out and out. Well, people don't want to live in the city, really. Some kids graduate college. They think it's a cool thing to do. They rent or get a townhome or something downtown. And by the time they're 28, getting married and having kids, they move to the suburbs. So yes, some people live downtown. And it's the economic center of the city. I'm not saying we shouldn't have a downtown. I'm a supporter of downtown. I'd love to see a ballpark downtown. I like to visit downtown. I don't want to live there. I don't need the noise. I don't need the crowded spaces. I don't need the crime. This is what we choose. This is our way of life. We don't want people interrupting that for us. I went to Clinton, Missouri yesterday, and I spoke to the Rotary Club. Larry Dawson, who you may remember as Larry Moffitt, Max Tannen Moffitt on KY102 back in the day, and 101 The Fox. I've known Moffitt for years. He works at Hawthorne Bank in Clinton. Hawthorne Bank has branches all over Missouri, like 20 or 30 banks, but he's a marketing director there. In fact, Moffitt has like the best post-media career job I've ever seen. He goes on a trip once a month with bank clients, and he gets to pick where they go. Like they're going to Wyoming, then they're going to go to Paris, then they put these trips together at Hawthorne Bank for their customers. It's really quite amazing. And so Moffitt's in charge of that out of an office in Clinton, Missouri. They arrange it. They're guided tours the whole way, and he goes and is the chaperone or the MC or whatever you want to call it for people who really don't want to deal with putting their own travel package together. They just want to go. And they're great trips, and so this is what he does. And he would come down, and we talk to Rotary, and we're having a good time. And all of this comes up, and I'm looking. He goes, man, I just love living here. He lives in Tightwad. I said, well, that's fitting. He didn't think that was as funny as I did. But I said, he lives in Tightwad. He's got a 15-minute drive into Clinton every day. He says he's got some land. He loves to go duck hunting. He loves the land. He loves the outdoors. It's just it's a way of life here. It's the way we are. It's the way we want to live. I had mentioned to him there's a place on the way into Clinton called Mallard Roadhouse. I've driven by it many times. I said, that place looks really neat, and I've never been in it. We get done with the lunch, and he goes, let's go have a beer over there. I said, okay, great. Frank Bohl was with me. I took Frank Bohl along. We spoke. We had just a great time. I busted out a lot of what I do on the podcast because I figured, well, I'm here. We're going to take questions from people. The audience had to be, the crowd had to be 90% conservative, all right? So I'm okay, but it can be a little stunning to hear. If you haven't heard some of the things I say politically, and we started talking about race and voter ID and the homeless in Kansas City, and I had some looks in the audience, man. They were looking at me like, wow, they hadn't heard this stuff before. But I took, I think, 30 business cards in there and give instructions on how to listen to the podcast. Every single one of them was gone when it was over. So I like that. I'm trying to spread the word. I'm doing what I can, getting this stuff out there. But we go into this Mallard's Roadhouse when it's over, and, you know, we're just having a cold one, and we keep talking. We're talking about the way of life, and there's all these mallards, ducks on the wall and deer head, and it's clearly an outdoorsy kind of place. The owner is there, Chad. It's a great place. And I'm just sitting here thinking to myself about life, lifestyle. Nobody's got a mask on. In Clinton, they're very relaxed. It's not like living in the city. It's a completely better way of life, to be honest. It's just a completely better way of life. People are not mask Nazis in Clinton, Missouri. They're not. They understand the dangers of the virus. They know who's at risk. They have a great hospital there, Golden Valley. I told the story. I used to drive to their hospital in Clinton and pick up COVID tests while I was in timeout during my non-compete. I've got a wonderful medical facility there. It's a great town, unbelievable people. And I just felt so comfortable. I just felt so comfortable. I thought, this is so far from Tony Fauci. Tony Fauci needs to visit a place like Clinton, Missouri. He really does. He needs to get out of his bubble. He needs to go to the Rotary Club and look those people in the eye and then have them ask him questions. This is what a guy like Fauci needs. He is stuck in his liberal bubble in D.C., and it's sickening. And yet all the media coverage, with the exception of Fox and a couple of online outlets. All the media coverage portrayed this episode between Jordan and Fauci as being, you know, the inaccurate, bombastic, show-stopping Jim Jordan and the outstanding, honorable Dr. Tony Fauci. And that just isn't the way it was. When you hear the clip, most Americans, if we can pass this along to them, if they see that clip and hear that clip, most Americans will say, I like that Jordan guy. He's right. I like that. I like what he's talking about. Because it still exists today. Give me liberty or give me death. And that's what Jim Jordan was talking about. We want our freedoms. We want our liberties. I want to go to Mallard's Roadhouse in Clinton and have a cold one or an appetizer. It's a great place. I met Chad, the owner. I mean, he's just got an unbelievable place. He's sitting up there at the bar. He's got a wonderful staff working the place. And he's got a friend who's in from Warrensburg. And they're sitting there 2 feet apart with no masks on, just chatting. Nobody's got a mask on in the place. They're not walking in with masks. I'm like, this is it. I need to go to Clinton. Clinton's it. It's better. It's better than Johnson County, where I live. I can tell you that. It's a hell of a lot better than Kansas City, Missouri, where there is a culture now that you're some sort of a criminal if you don't have your mask on. Well, they've eased restrictions. You're made to be some sort of a loser. Like, oh my God, there's a criminal. He's got a mask on. Get him. He doesn't have a mask on. Get him out of here. It's crazy. But the total death toll over 13 months is basically 9% COVID, 3% lockdowns. That's where we are. That's what we created. We created about a 3-to-1 ratio. The COVID deaths to the COVID lockdown deaths is about 3-to-1. And to me, that's not a good ratio. And I'll ask you this question. In 2021, now that we're where we are, now that we have the vaccine, now that we've had a lot of people that have had it, what will 2021 be? If 9%, if the total deaths are up and 9% of that, total deaths were up, they say 12%, okay? So 12%. 9% of those 12 was COVID. 3% was because of lockdowns. That's obvious. That's easy math. That's simple math for anyone. If that's what we were in 2020, what is it in 2021? Well, I don't think the death toll is going to be up 12% in 2021. I think it's going to be up a few percent. Let's say it's up 5%. Let's make an even number. Let's say it's up 4% or 6. Don't you think it's going to be more like half of that is COVID deaths and the other half is increased drug overdoses, homicides, and suicides? Don't you think that's coming in 2021? The big picture question here, and there's no, Fauci can't answer this. Nobody can answer this. My gut tells me, my instinct tells me, we're at a place right now where the number of COVID deaths is equal to the number of deaths that are caused by the way we're treating COVID. That's a real heady thing to think about. But the number of people dying of COVID now, I think, is going to be equal to the number of people of the increase of drug overdoses, homicides, suicides, stress-related heart attacks, strokes, things of this nature. I think we're at an equal number right now. I think that's where we are. And if that's the case, you cannot justify keeping anything locked down anymore. We got to get people back to normal. We got to start thinking about the drugs overdosing, the homicides and the suicides. We have to. I think we're at a really close number right now to where that number's even. That the COVID deaths and those numbers are about equal. And if that's the case, we're overdoing it. People can get the vaccine, right? People can't go back to work if their employer won't let them. If you're locked down or in a lockdown state, you don't get to make those choices. Things are decided for you. You have the choice of how to live. You have the choice of getting the vaccine. The COVID thing is overdone at this point. It's the effects of what we're doing because of COVID that I think is the biggest killer right now and the biggest problem in our society. And I felt that, and I stood and I roared and I cheered when I heard Jim Jordan do that because I believe what he believes. I believe it is now overdone and it's time to end it. All right, the media has introduced something that I didn't know existed. Maybe you did. I didn't know this existed. There's a big campaign now about Asian hate, discrimination against Asians. I have a theory, as I've learned about Asian hate, that this is now something they somehow, even though Trump is gone, they want to tie this to Donald Trump. Somehow they want to say that Asian hate is up. Crimes against Asian, bias, bigotry, whatever against Asians is up. And it's Trump's fault for naming it the China virus or the Wuhan virus or whatever it may be. I think that's where this is going. I have no idea why they've brought up Asian hate. But there is plenty of data now and incidents that have occurred, and the latest was in Los Angeles, riding the bus, a 70-year-old Mexican-American woman was beaten by a 23-year-old black woman after the black woman attacked her and screamed a bunch of Asian hate things at her. The 23-year-old black woman thought the 70-year-old Mexican-American woman was Asian. She pummeled this woman. Concussions, swollen eyes, can't see. The lady's in the hospital. Beat her to near death after a fight on a bus spilled into the streets. Argument on a bus apparently spilled into the streets and became a fight. The black woman went screaming Asian hate stuff at the Mexican-American woman and beat the living daylights out of her, even though she wasn't Asian. This was an Asian hate crime perpetrated by a 23-year-old black woman. Again, when I say I hadn't heard of Asian hate, it's because I don't know what that is. But it's out there now, and it's becoming pretty obvious, I think, for most people that are being honest. I can't give you data. I can't give you hard numbers. The incidents we're seeing, they're happening in New York a lot, on the streets of New York, a lot. So if it starts in New York, of course, it's a national problem. Well, no, it's not a problem at all in red states. It's just, it doesn't exist. We don't know what this is. And I hate talking about skin color and generalizing. I don't think white people know what Asian hate is. I don't think they've heard of it. It's not a thing. What we're seeing is violent attacks on Asians all across the country. The overwhelming number of those are being committed by black people. So I don't know what this is, and I don't know why we'd bring this up. The media is introducing this and clearly promoting this like white people are racist. That's what this is all about. When you see these public service announcements or news stories or whatever it may be, you know, this is the liberal left introducing Asian hate in America. Because, I didn't know it existed. I didn't know it was a thing. But, man, they're on it. And they're on it for a reason. They're going to pin this thing to Trump and try to say it's conservatives. And I don't know how this can possibly happen. Because every story I see about some Asian American harmless person, good person, getting beaten up because they're Asian, the stories I've seen in New York and the one in LA here yesterday is from a black person doing it. I don't understand it. I don't get it. Why would the media even, you know, we used to say in journalism school, they said, don't report on suicides. Because if you make a suicide, if somebody commits suicide and you give their name, you sort of make them famous. And so don't do it. It might lead somebody else to taking their own life to be on the news. That's common sense. That doesn't exist in journalism anymore. There is nothing to be gained by the media introducing, and that's what they're doing. The media are introducing Asian hate in America, which really doesn't exist at a very high level. And when it does, if they want to start cherry-picking incidents of violence against Asians, that's not what they're, by the way, that's not what they're reporting on. They're not reporting on violence against Asians. They're reporting on Asian hate so they can portray it as white people hate Asians. It's just insidious. This is awful what they do to try to pull people apart. But it's happening. And a 70-year-old Mexican-American woman got pummeled by a 23-year-old black woman because the black woman thought she was Asian and screamed a bunch of Asian hate stuff at her and beat her up after they rode a bus together. I mean, this is upside down, man. This is just out of control, insane stuff. And the more liberal media try to break us apart, the worse it's going to get. And it's just awful. It's so bad for everyone involved. There's nothing to be gained by any of it unless you're a Democrat that wants power. And that's what it's all about. Divide and conquer. Divide and conquer. Divide and conquer. And that's what they do. We have shining stars like a bishop at a Tampa, Florida ministry, Bishop Aubrey Shines. You may have heard of him. He came out yesterday with some comments about Black Lives Matter and things that are going on in the United States. He is black. His church is black. And he's preaching the good word to these folks that you're being lied to. Aubrey Shines, during an interview, said, the biggest conundrum leftists are trying to use is voter ID requirements that are racially discriminatory against black or brown people. Black and brown people, like white people, already have IDs. 72% of everyone that we polled, black and brown, they actually find it offensive for any white liberal to assume that they don't have the wherewithal mentally to ascertain some form of ID. I brought this up in Clinton at the Rotary Club yesterday. Their heads were spinning. They couldn't believe it. I said, what could be more racist than implying that the most marginalized among us are too stupid to get an ID? And then I gave the example of the homeless camps in Kansas City. They took 500 people from homeless tents in Kansas City and put them in hotel rooms. They didn't put them in hotel rooms without IDs. You can't put people, hotels won't allow anybody in without identification of some sort. We're not letting you live in our hotel for 90 days if we don't know who you are. The police and fire department certainly aren't. What if they set the place on fire? They want to know who's in there so they can charge them. These are documented Americans. And by the way, every single American at birth is identified. You get a Social Security card. This is absurd and it's racist. It's so racist. And people's heads were spinning. They hadn't heard this in Clinton. I'm like, it's the most racist thing I've ever heard for a white liberal to say black people are too stupid or too poor or too dumb to get an ID. And Joe Biden has said it, for crying out loud. It's absolute insanity. And Aubrey Shines is pointing that out. He's a bishop in Tampa, Florida, and he's a smart man, and he's preaching this to his church. He goes on and says, how is it that America is systemically racist when hundreds of thousands of black men spilled their blood, along with white men, on the soil to make sure that we live the creed of what we were founded upon? How is it that if we were so systematically racist, did blacks and whites together begin to fight against policies like Jim Crow laws and the KKK and education that would be separated? But according to them, not equal? I can tell you, blacks and whites unified in this country. There was a collaboration, and we began to beat back this fascist idea. There's this duplicity that's going on in our nation, and they're pointing the fingers, trying to make sure that whites and blacks are divided. They have a purpose because it takes light away from what's really going on in this nation, and that's the failed policies of who I call the occupier in office, Joe Biden. I mean, he makes some great points there. I mean, he makes some unbelievable points about what is important. He talks a lot about Martin Luther King's vision for America and Black Lives Matter. A lot of people think Black Lives Matter is like the new Martin Luther King. It couldn't be more opposite. Martin Luther King was a Christian. He preached family and Christian values. Martin Luther King is a great American hero. Everybody recognizes that. Black Lives Matter is anti-religion. They are Marxists. It's in their charter. It's in their documents. They are anti-religion. They are not Christian. A lot of black people support black, a lot of people that are Christian support Black Lives Matters because they don't know it's anti-religion. The left and the media aren't going to say it. Big tech isn't going to say it. Nobody's going to say it. We have to get people educated on these things. We got to do it somehow. There's a huge distinction between what Martin Luther King wanted and what BLM wants. Martin Luther King didn't want violence. BLM stands for violence. That's what they are. Bishop Aubrey Shines is a hero for stepping up and doing that and taking his congregation and trying to convince a few of those people in Florida, hey, listen, this hasn't worked. What they're doing isn't right. Violence doesn't work. That's not Christian. What Black Lives Matter isn't right. What the left is doing to you isn't right. There's a better way. And that way is togetherness. He also went on a rant that the only party that's ever really been racist against blacks is the Democrat Party. And we know that because they came up with all the laws that were implemented against black people. That was the Democrats, the most anti-black party in the history of America, the Democrat Party. Well, I guess if you want to consider the KKK a political party, it may or may not have been, depending on how you look at it. But the Democrats are the racist party, always have been. And what they're doing right now is bad for blacks in America. They are. They're hurting them, and they know it, and they're using them. And they're pitting black against white for their personal gain for power. Pathetic. KKHI is brought to you by bstock.net. Chris sent me over an email this morning at bstock. He's got the curved Samsung 4K TVs, 55-inch. $699, bstock price $449. That's crazy. All right, so the circle, the curved TVs didn't go over all that great when they introduced them, but gamers love them. So if you like to play video games or your kid likes to play video games, he says what a lot of people do is they'll buy two of these and they'll create a semicircle. And you put your, where you sit in your chair or whatever and play your games, it surrounds you, your entire peripheral vision. The screen becomes one big round screen, like 180 degrees, and it, apparently it's an amazing gaming experience. So if your kid's a gamer, or you're looking to create some sort of experience like that for yourself, right now at Beestock, these things are only $449. They are regularly $699 everywhere. That's amazing. The curved 4K 55-inch at beestock.net, 14680 South Flaming Road in Olathe. Fry Orthodontics, Dr. Jeremy Fry, with two new programs they've introduced that nobody else does. First of all, they're the best orthodontist in the city. Second of all, they treat you or your kid so gently and so happily. They've got a real spirit at the offices where they do all the great work. They make something that's not fun, fun. And that's really cool. So that's cool. That's all the reason in the world to go to Fry Orthodontics. But now, Dr. Jeremy's offering free retainers for life, which is really a great program if you got a kid, because they're going to lose the retainer. And they're offering Invisalign for the same price as braces. Nobody else does that. FryOrthodontics.com is the website. 469-9191 is the number. Call for your appointment. Mention KKHI. First appointment is free at Fry Orthodontics. And Mother's Day is coming up here, guys, in a couple of weeks. Joslyn's Jewelry, 95th and Antioch, is the go-to place. Gary's in there. Dave Cameron is a great young guy, has married into the family. He's going to work in the business and eventually probably take it over. They're all there. It's just family, family, family at Joslyn's Jewelry, the jewelry you'll recommend to your friends and family. The Royals keep winning, and it was dicey again at the end last night. The Royals had a 7-0 lead and had to hold on against the Toronto Blue Jays. Jacob Junis had a great start, but then it sort of fell apart with the bullpen, and you kind of knew it would. I'm worried about the Royals' bullpen. I'm worried about it because they don't – I like a system. I like guys knowing roles in the back end. We don't know. Barlow got the 8th inning last night, only threw 6 pitches. My mom's biggest beef with Ned Yost through the years was, why did he not bring the pitcher back? That was a short inning. That pitcher got through easily. Bring him back. I call her during the commercial break. I said, Mom, what are you going to do? Barlow or somebody else? Oh, I'm going to bring Barlow back. I'm going to bring Barlow back. I think Matheny might. I think he's different than that. I'm going to bring him back. Well, Barlow got in a world of jam in the 9th. I said, Mom, he only threw 6 pitches in the 8th, but they hit him hard. She goes, but they got him out. And I said, yeah, Mom, but every ball was hit hard. Okay? He didn't go out there and strike the side out. He threw 6 pitches and got 3 outs. That's on the Blue Jays. They hit it right at Royals players. Okay? They hit him hard. Well, they came back in the 9th inning, and they hit him hard again. And, of course, the thing went down to the wire in the last pitch, and he got out of it, and the Royals win the game. And Holland warming up, that wasn't going to work. Holland finishing the game is not going to work. I'm sorry. I love the guy. Royals Hall of Famer, all these great things. Greg Holland, Wade Davis can't be in the back end of the bullpen. The Royals have to figure it out with their young guys, and I don't know what the timeline is on this, but they're, and I mentioned this yesterday, this is coming. They're going to lose games on the back end, and when it happens, you're going to get mad because you're going to be confused with what Matheny's doing. You're going to say, I don't know who's pitching when, but this isn't working. So I believe the roles need to be defined. And you hand them to him and you stick with it. And if it doesn't work for the 8th inning guy, if 2 or 3 times he gets knocked around, you change the 8th inning guy, fine. You got to change the 9th inning guy, whatever. You got to groom that guy. Holland and Davis aren't going to get it. They're just not. They don't pitch like they used to pitch, and they're going to break down this year. They're old. You can't rely on them. If you want to make a playoff run, and the Royals are now 7-4 to start the year, if you want to do this, what they're doing right now will not hold up. It can't, and it won't. We've all watched too much baseball to know that. Besides that, there are plenty of good signs. Again, the Royals just continue to be a team that seems to have fun together, but you can't, you know, the Rangers, we laughed at the Rangers. They had a couple of big leads on the Royals and lost. You can't lead 7-0 with your starting pitcher cruising and have your bullpen make it a game. You can't do that. They've got to find a way to be better. I think they've got the arms of the organization, and it's not something you just, you know, wave a magic wand and, okay, everybody knows their role, here it is. They have to find their way. I'm not insinuating that he's got to figure this out today. I'm saying over the next couple weeks, the Royals, the single most pressing issue right now with Dayton Moore and Mike Matheny is, what are we doing on the back end? Where do we want to go? Who do we want to see in the 8th, and who do we want to see in the 9th? And how do we groom them there? Because hanging on with Holland and Davis isn't going to work. So let's get them there. There's a lot of great young arms in this organization. Let's go. If that means they get knocked around a little bit early this year before they get more comfortable in their roles, let's go do it. The Royals are 7-4, man. It's amazing. It's really, really cool stuff. College basketball, a good piece in the Star. I think it was Jesse Newell wrote it. a good piece in the Star with Bill Self commenting about the transfer portal in college basketball. And Bill Self has pointed out that he likes the name, image, and likeness for the players. That's them getting paid to do commercials and stuff. It does create a situation where good players will leave smaller programs and go to bigger programs because they can make more money. I think it's a mess. I think the whole thing's a mess. This transfer portal this offseason, you ready for this staggering number? 1,375 basketball players in Division I have transferred. What on earth are we doing? How do you keep score? At the University of Kansas, 5 transfers out, 2 players have gotten an agent and declared pro, and 1 coach left for Texas. This is where we are. This is what we want college basketball to be. We just want to, we're going to turn this into baseball or basketball, pro sports where the roster is different every year. Players come into your program. If they play for, if they're there for a year or two and they don't get on the court, they're going to leave. So the 6th, 7th, and 8th guys on the team always want out because they're not starting. This is what you want to create. And every year, so Kansas, by my math, could have what? 7 new players next year? What Kansas fan wants that? Don't you want guys that stay? We got to make this a contest with coaches instead of building a program. We're going to turn this into which coaches can be the best coaches in a 3-month period of time to get their team ready to play when it really counts. Because it's going to be all new. Everybody's team every year is going to be all new. And which coaches are going to be good at coaching them the fastest? I think it's insane. I think we're creating a system where they're all going to get paid big money. The money's going to go up. So if you, for example, if the word gets out that we'll use this in state, we'll use KU and K-State. K-State's a football school, KU's a basketball school, right? So let's say K-State decides we're going to have car dealers, banks, restaurants. We're going to take 25 good football players, and they're all going to be doing commercials. They're all going to get to do wear menswear and do, you know, ads and online and social media and all this stuff. They're all going to be doing this. And they're all going to get paid for it at K-State playing football. But at Kansas, the football players don't get paid. That's the basketball players. That the Toyota dealership's going to pay this guy to do a commercial. He's going to pay that. That the money is where. So you're just going to create more of a divide between those two schools. That if you're a Kansas kid, you're in high school, you're going to go to K-State because you can make money from sponsors. When you know if you go to KU, you won't. That's going to help K-State in football with in-state recruits. It's going to hurt Kansas. The opposite will be true in basketball. You know, where are you going to go to school? Where are you going to transfer? Now this is really bizarre. What if you're the 3rd best, 4th best player at Kansas and your endorsements, your money you're making isn't all that great compared to the top guy on the team who's going to the NBA, but Creighton wants you and Warren Buffett's sitting up there and they got a whole bunch of Berkshire Hathaway money floating around in Omaha, and they're going to offer you a bunch of money from Berkshire Hathaway to do Nebraska Furniture Mart cards, ads to be on the Creighton basketball team. We're going to use your name, image, and likeness to do commercials for Nebraska Furniture Mart up there, but you can't get Nebraska Furniture Mart commercial here. You're just going to leave? You're just going to go to Creighton? And you're allowed to do it without sitting out. We have 1,375 transfers in college basketball this year, and that's before they're getting paid for their name, image, and likeness. We got a giant mess coming in college hoops. I don't like any of it. I'll be honest. And it's not that I'm resistant to change. I love change for the better. I love anything that's change for the better. I think change for change's sake is almost always a horrible idea. And I feel like that's what they're doing here in college basketball. April 25th at Talladega, there will be a NASCAR race. The big race, the Cup Series race. Jennifer Jo Cobb is 47 years old. She is from Kansas City, Kansas. She has raced everywhere in the Midwest. She has raced ARCA races. She's a truck series driver. She is as veteran and experienced a female driver as there's ever been. At age 47, she has raced for years and years and years and years and years. On April 25th at Talladega, she's going to be behind the wheel of the number 15 Chevrolet for the Richard Ware Racing Team, and she will drive in her first Cup Series race. Jennifer Jo Cobb, a couple times, was on my old radio show when I had the Racing Boys on. They've known her for years. So many people in the Kansas City area and the Midwest know Jennifer Jo Cobb and root for her. This is not a team that has a chance to win a race, really. But what an unbelievable See, I love stories like this. I love that she has persevered and raced and not gotten rich, that she just loves driving and loves racing, has pursued her passion, her best American life, did not allow anyone to tell her what she can or can't do, and she's getting a chance. Late in her career, she's getting a chance to do something she's always dreamed of doing. And that's race in a Cup Series race. That is awesome. Congratulations, Jennifer Jo Cobb. She's the first female to race in a Cup Series race since Danica Patrick retired. There haven't been that many through the years, but it'll be fun to see her out there and see how she does. It'll be a big moment for her personally. She's a great Kansas Cityan, and I think this is a moment we should all celebrate. That's how we end Kevin Keatsman Has Issues on a happy note. Another happy note. I got an email from a listener yesterday that told me he has told between 15 and 20 people about the podcast. When I was in Clinton speaking at the Rotary Club, I didn't expect people to know about the podcast. I expected most people in the room to know that I had done a radio show. And they were there because they know who the guest speaker is. So when most people show up that week, they're like, okay, I like this sports guy, or he was the guy on the radio, I'm going to go listen. I had several people walk up and say they're listening to the podcast. It's amazing. Now, a whole bunch of people didn't know I was doing it, and I told them about it. And I think I got a lot of people in there that like maybe the politics more than the sports. I don't know. But it was pretty much red meat for that audience. It's pretty cool that the word is getting out. And I really have all of you to thank, because when I'm learning more and more, and one gentleman came up and said, I listened, I got my wife listening, we told our friends about it. That's what's happening with the podcast. Okay, that's what's happening, because there's no other local media outlet doing what we're doing. You don't get this anywhere else. You don't. And so that when I designed it, I thought, well, I don't know how many people will like it or will listen, but I know it's a sweet spot. I know you don't get it from the Star. I know you don't get it from the TV stations, and I know you don't get it on sports radio. You get some of it on conservative talk radio, Pete Mundo, Chris DeGaul, those guys. You get some of that. I really feel like what we're doing here is more of a hybrid, and it's different than a lot of the things that you're going to get anywhere in Kansas City, and that's what I'm hearing from people. And man, I got an email from a dude that said, I think I've told between 15 and 20 people, and told him, hit that follow or like button. I can't tell you the difference it's making with the people that are hitting follow, subscribe, or like. That's free. I did not know this. I did not start really promoting this. I think you know if you listen to the podcast. I didn't start promoting this really until like after the Super Bowl. And the numbers have like tripled since then. That was high season. That was the Chiefs in the playoffs. But the number of followers has tripled since then. And it's you doing this. It's you. You're hitting the follow, subscribe, like button, and you're finding other people to do it. And it's making a big difference because, you know, information is everything. We got to let people know about the things that we talked about on today's podcast. They need to know these things. They need to know that if we had 400,000 more people die last year than normal, 300 were COVID, 100,000 were because of the lockdowns. This is important stuff. You don't just willy-nilly go kill or have 100, you know, don't say kill, have 100,000 people die because you mismanaged the pandemic and shut America down. This is important stuff for people to know. So I really appreciate you listening. And I can't thank you enough, all of you that are emailing in or telling me that you've told people, hey, give this thing a listen. That it's got to be grassroots. You know, we did some social media blasting. I'm having a hard time getting on local media. I've sort of been blackballed. The more I talk about conservative politics, the less likely it is that I will get on any of the other media outlets to talk about what we're doing here. And by the way, they see me as competition now, so they really don't want to help it. It's small, but they fear what it could become, and they don't want the competition. I know this for a fact because I've had somebody tell me that a decision maker at a media outlet here has already said, no, he's our competition. It is absolutely the coolest thing that happened just in the last couple of weeks. It is the coolest thing that's happened in the 7 months we've done this. To hear somebody high up in a local media outlet say, no, he's our competition. That's awesome. And you got to know when you're blackballed or they won't have you on or whatever, they see you as something threatening. That's fantastic. That's awesome. And that's because of you. That's because you've spread the word and the numbers are up and people are listening. And when they hit that follow, subscribe, or like button, it is free and it is powerful. It is amazing. So I don't know how I'm going to thank it. We're going to get something together here. We're going to do an event where everybody's invited and hopefully I'll get a chance to meet so many of you and thank you in person, because I've got this unbelievable desire to thank all of you in person and shake your hand and not wear a mask or even give you a hug, because that's what I feel. And I just simply can't thank you enough for listening to Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. and sort of being the troops on the ground out there spreading the words. Thank you so much. Have a great week. Oh, we're going to do a bonus pod coming up on Friday or Friday night. I've got Charlotte O'Hare coming up. She's a commissioner in Johnson County. She's the anti-masker. And the county commission is kind of flipped to the left a little bit. And you've never met or heard anybody more anti-mask than Charlotte O'Hare. So we're going to have a conversation with her. And I'll post that at some point, maybe Friday afternoon, maybe Friday evening. I don't know when I'll post it, but it will be up as well. So we're going to have a bonus pod coming up that I think you're really going to enjoy if you like that topic, Charlotte O'Hare. So thank you so much for listening to Kevin Keatsman Has Issues.
Thanks for listening to Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. For additional VIP-only podcasts, live streaming of breaking news, sports wagering tips from the experts, and in-person special events, visit kkhasissues.com and become a patron for as little as $5 per month.
This has been a production of Crooked Tail Media Incorporated.